My guest today, Colleen Rowley, had a long and distinguished career with the FBI before retiring in 2004 after serving 24 years in a variety of positions, mainly as a special agent, which provided her with an unusual insight into the workings as well as failures of the intelligence community. In 2002, she testified to the Senate and 9/11 Commission about the FBI's pre-9/11 lapses due to its internal organization and mishandling of information related to the attacks, which led to her sharing Time Magazine's Person of the Year Award with two other women whistleblowers. In February 2003, she warned her superiors, quote, that the Bureau was not prepared to deal with new terrorist strikes that she and many colleagues fear would result from an American war with Iraq, end quote. Rowley has been a regular contributor at the Huffington Post since January 2006, as well as writing for The Guardian, and authored a chapter in Patriotism, Democracy, and Common Sense, Restoring America's Promise at Home and Abroad, published by Roman and Littlefield in 2005. She is also a member of the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, or VIPS, whose memorandum to President Trump regarding the crisis over Syria I referred to earlier in the program. Welcome again to Takes on the World, Colleen Rowley.
Thanks for having me. I also wrote a chapter in the book, Why Peace?
Well, you have a remarkable career. We last spoke to you in 2014 about the role that the neocons have been setting up for U.S. foreign policy following 9/11. And with the attack on Syria and the anti-Russian hysteria that has gripped liberal media, it seems like they're back in control.
Absolutely. We now have this unholy alliance between the neocon war hawks, which under the Bush administration were largely on the Republican side, with the so-called conservative side. But what's happened is this sea change now, and this began to happen even long before the election, where the liberal powers under Hillary Clinton, and Samantha Power, what they call the humanitarian interventionists, or the humanitarian war believers, that you have to have the U.S. plain policeman of the world, and at some point disciplining the countries that don't obey U.S. edicts or whatever, and that's all Samantha Powers. And Madeleine Albright. Madeleine Albright actually began it. And, of course, Hillary Clinton is a disciple of this. So they got the liberals, the power liberals, on the side of the neocon war hawks. Now, some of the neocon war hawks, like John McCain, have actually now become supporters of Hillary Clinton. So, you know, our old party distinctions have just gone up in smoke. In fact, if anything, I'm going to tell you something just amazing, which actually surprised me. But our VIPS memo of yesterday, that for a lot of reason, casting doubt upon the White House intelligence, that's even dignifying it too much. The White House paper saying, which actually is Ivanka Trump, saying that she's outraged that, the Syrian government's killing babies, and there's no evidence at all for this. But our VIPS memo cast doubt on that and basically gave advice to Trump. That memo that came out yesterday that's published in Consortium News was retweeted by Ann Coulter. Far right, who, of course, supported everything that the Bush administration did. There has been a sea change in that some of the conservatives now are, mad that Trump has gone against his America First pledge and gone against what he criticized Hillary Clinton as being stupid for initiating these so-called regime changes. And a lot of the conservatives believe Trump. And now they are the ones who have been betrayed. It's completely topsy-turvy right now in terms of the political situation. And I think people have a hard time understanding when this happens so suddenly, which is what has happened. But these neocons are just like AIPAC. They have their tentacles in what Obama called the D.C. playbook. He called it the D.C. playbook to make, a euphemistic term. In fact, it's what the pro-Israel hardcore war hawks that have been they control the think tanks, a large, not just one think tank, but they are really in many, many think tanks. And they control both parties, just as the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee does. It's a smart strategy, as opposed to many lobbying groups that pick one party or the other. It's a smart strategy to control both parties and to control the military-industrial complex through the think tanks.
Well, it's interesting. I just, before I called you, I spoke about the AIPAC conference every year. It's bigger than ever by about 2,000. They even had to, a couple of years ago, to move to a larger convention center. This year, 18,000. And I've been outside of one of those in, a few years back, and it's like a Nuremberg rally. The puffery, the puffed up hubris of these people attending it, because they know they are the power in Washington. And it's interesting when they talk about Russia's interference with our elections, of course, without mentioning anymore what the Democratic National Committee did or what Podesta's emails revealed that the American people had every right to know, but evidently not in their opinion. No country has interfered more in the U.S. election than the government of Israel. Can you imagine 2 years ago when Netanyahu was invited by the former Republican functionary, American citizen turned coat Ron Dermer to speak to both houses of Congress? Any other president, if it had been Obama, would have put Dermer on the first plane back to Israel.
That's exactly right. Israel is not only the biggest meddler in American politics and in American elections, trying to swing elections or whatever, but they are also the country that is amongst the top, if not the top, country engaged in outright espionage. And this was always the case if FBI documents eventually through FOIA and whatever get released, and sometimes even through whistleblowers. Israel is very successful at conducting this espionage, and the United States knows it, but it's never made public. It's almost never talked about. So these are kind of the softer methods through PR and through controlling different entities and groups and obviously the party apparatus. But then the harder, a little bit harder power thing is through espionage itself, through outright stealing of documents. And we had that one indictment, back a few years ago of a couple of AIPAC officials for having stolen Iran. I think it was documents about, these were military and or intelligence documents about Iran, and they were handed over to AIPAC. So they were, that was an outright espionage. And so any case, you're absolutely right. It's Israel that is the country that is, and other countries, of course. One thing about the Russian, all countries that have the ability, of course, whose country has the superpower and the ability to do this more than any other country, to listen in and surveil United Nations offices. What country is doing that the most? Well, it's the United States. Israel's right up there, too. But the United States, and obviously with some of our Five Eye allies, we share these mechanisms whereby we spy on all other foreign leaders, even Angela Merkel and other Hollande and other European allies that we call allies publicly. But in the truth is, we are spying on these leaders. My background in the FBI, I did not work too much on foreign counterintelligence, but I did have some familiarity with it. From time to time, I did have some roles that involved foreign counterintelligence, and I did read the cables that are that even back then, with much less spying after 9/11. Of course, it became rampant and it was on steroids. But back in the 80s and the 90s, the cables and stuff were a little more focused and limited. But by and large, that one of the main aims of these spy operations of our CIA and whatever and offense, is to get blackmail on leaders. So if you find out, you know, obviously sex affairs are a wonderful form of blackmail. But it's amazing that that spine is, some of it's on things like what AIPAC got, the Iran intelligence. But a lot of the spine is on personal stuff because they want to gain control of as many foreign leaders as possible. And that's one of the mechanisms that's one of the reasons for the spine. And so in any case, going back to what I was just saying, our country, the United States, certainly Israel, and any country that has the ability does this. And so to have this outrage now that even if, let's say that there was a Russian hacker, even if there was a Russian hacker, and even if that hacker was somehow connected in some ways to government entities or to military entities in the Soviet Union or in Russia, that is normal. And you know what? The officials that are out there in the public airwaves pretending to be so surprised and outraged and ginning up this, of course, World War III practically based on this, have that absolutely know that this is just common everyday occurrence that all countries try to. It is, read a John le Carré book. You know, read a John le Carré book. This is the spy world. This is the spook world. This is what has always gone on. Probably digitized communications and the ether that all of these contacts and communications are flying have changed things just a little bit in terms of the technology. So that has changed a little bit because the spying used to be more human-based and it used to be in hard paper documents and things like that. So there's been maybe a little change that way. Otherwise, there's no change. This has been going on since time immemorial. And yet we get our newspapers and our mass media telling us that we have to, it's an act of war. We have John McCain and even our media telling us it's an act of war now for something that's been going on for decades.
It's interesting. You mentioned it, topsy-turvy. It certainly is. The first person who interviewed Julian Assange about this was not Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, but Sean Hannity on Fox News. And Amy interviewed Assange just the other day. And then the very last part of the program, she brought in Alan Nairn, really a fine journalist, who made a fool out of himself by accusing Trump of having accusing Julian Assange of having endorsed Trump, which he never did, and Trump corrected him and said, what I said was it's like a vote between Clinton and Trump is like choosing cholera or gonorrhea. He didn't say which was which. But in any case, and so Nairn looked like a fool trying to talk about Russian interference in our election. And Assange mentioned we have interfered in 81 elections.
Yeah.
And really interfered to the point of people dying, assassinations, and so on. And even getting Boris Yeltsin elected was a whole American team that was over there doing that. So this holier-than-thou attitude and it never goes away. It doesn't matter who's in Washington and who's writing columns in the media. It's a national disease.
Absolutely. I know we don't have a real long time to talk, and I want to kind of encourage listeners to take responsibility now. You know, instead of elected leaders, these politicians of both parties, it does not matter which, and there's that tendency, to, of course, to always a hope for this new benevolent leader. I think that was some of the Trump populism. Besides the fact that he was making really promises about non-intervention and vilifying regime change, so there was some reason for the Trump populism, but there was also, as always, just the normal people who want to think that they can get behind a leader and that it really will change they will act for the public good instead of for their own narrow, you know, corrupt selves, etc. I think right now what listeners need to know is we, the people, across the board, need to do more, take action. Our VIPS group is really a good symbol of this. We are just nobodies. We're, you know, there's thousands and actually millions of government retirees that are just happy to collect a pension, go traveling, you know, play with the grandchildren. Ray McGovern, Ann Wright, Thomas Drake, Larry Wilkerson, you know, myself. But now we have a whole little core group of people who have said, you know, I am happy in retirement, you know, but I don't want the world to end tomorrow. I don't want World War III. I look out there, and I can tell from what I experienced in government about how these systemic pressures come on people like Mattis and Masters, how the military-industrial complex, how the neocon think tanks have operated before. And I know that's going on. There are real significant indications of false intelligence, and we're going to do our darndest now to try to get that out. So Ray McGovern started this in 2003 when Colin Powell made his presentation to the UN, held up vials, completely false allegations, and Ray and some other retired CIA people founded VIPS and put out a memo saying this was wrong and, you know, it's going to lead to disastrous results. Then over the years, I think we're up to almost 40 memos. You know, we criticize the Obama administrations. When Obama was about ready to bomb Syria based on false intelligence in 2013, we wrote two or three memos, you know, asking for the evidence. We did about the downing over Ukraine of the airliner. Again, all of these lying into war, which is in a long trajectory of from Gulf of Tonkin and the Lusitania and the Maine and the putting the babies out of the incubators, and every single war is started through these false flag isn't quite the right term, but these are propaganda, war propaganda lies that are used then to convince people that you know, as the Nazi said, that they are being attacked. And the lies about Russia, and now most recently Syria, are exactly in the same vein. And so our little group, again, average nobodies out there, takes it on ourselves to try to tell, you know, tell the officials. And a couple of times we know that officials have read them. Going back to the listeners, listeners need to do the same thing. If, you know, look out there, read for yourself, you know, keep your open, critical mind. Do not believe or trust just because I didn't vote for Trump, by the way, and I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Don't trust if you did vote for Trump, for instance, or if you did vote for Hillary Clinton. Come on, get a little skepticism. Keep your critical thinking skills. Read what's out there, and now remember what has gone on in the past. Remember how they ginned up the wars on Iraq and Libya and the other countries. Recall how these were complete and utter lies. The people in Benghazi were not going to be assassinated. Gaddafi was not giving Viagra to his army. You know, Shalabi was telling us a bunch of lies about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. Remember the past. And then, you know, come on, now take the initiative. Like in my case, I do have social media, Facebook. Come on, put out the real. We have to counteract mainstream news. Mainstream news has just fallen hook, line, and sinker with this notion of perpetual war and what they call the liberal, the new liberal world order, quote unquote, which is actually for American empire. And you know, this our mainstream media gets paid that way, as does the weapons industry. Come on, pull back, see the conflicts of interest, think for yourself, and now share this information with more people. It's the only real hope we have. And I just want to mention one more thing about the Syria false information. I hope it will be made public, and I'm giving you a real scoop here because this is something that for right now I don't think is published. But our VIPs just came into possession of a paper, a 14-page paper by Theodore Postol, who is a professor emeritus at MIT, and if you remember who Theodore Postol is, an absolute expert on weapons and things like that, MIT, you know, complete right. Science, and he was one of the main people who debunked the prior false line propaganda in 2013 that Assad had you know, used sarin to gas his own people in Ghouta. It was MIT scientist Theodore Postol who said that these missiles or these bombs could not have had the range. Human Rights Watch was going out to the New York Times and publishing a map that showed that the sarin gas came from like 9 or more miles away, and Postol said, no, it can't even possibly travel that far. It can only travel 2 miles. And so that entire map had to be thrown away. New York Times was forced to retract a portion of its prior war propaganda in 2013. Well, it was Postol that did that. And now he's saying, do I have time to read just a part of this here? About the casting doubt on the report that the White House is putting out about Syria attacking the people in Idlib province with sarin, killing the children, whatever. Do I have time to read just a portion of it?
Yeah.
Okay. The only undisputable facts stated in the White House report is the claim that a chemical attack using nerve agent occurred in Khan Shaykhun, Syria, on that morning. Although the White House statement repeats this point in many places within its report, the report contains absolutely no evidence that this attack was the result of a munition being dropped from an aircraft. In fact, the report contains absolutely no evidence who would indicate who was the perpetrator of this atrocity. The report repeats observations of physical effects suffered by victims, with very little doubt, indicate nerve agent poisoning. The only source the document cites as evidence that the attack was by the Syrian government is the crater it claims to have identified on the road in the north of Shaykhun. Postol located this crater using Google Earth, and there is absolutely no evidence that the crater was created by a munition designed to disperse sarin after it was dropped from an aircraft. Okay, it goes on from there. That it looks like it's more likely it was a dispersed from the ground. Okay. By the way, this area where this agent, this toxin was dispersed, is Al Qaeda aligned controlled territory. And now, of course, we don't hear this on any of our mainstream news. But where the villagers were killed is controlled by Al Qaeda linked opposition forces to Syria. So there's no independent reporting. So Postol, using Google Earth, is looking at the crater that the White House is basing its information and intelligence on, and saying that couldn't have been dropped from an aircraft. It looks like it's from the ground. That's one fact in 14 pages. There's this 14 pages here. And again, our news people are not even asking the questions. They just look at it. Children dying, sad as it is, you know, that children are killed for these reasons. It's the saddest thing in the world that children are dying under these bombs, by the way, including many of our bombs. And, you know, Ivanka Trump gets emotional upset. By the way, I don't know how anyone can watch those videos and not become emotional upset. Unfortunately, bombing Gaza, you know, I was out there too, because it's sad to see so many civilians and children being killed like this. But our mainstream news is glossing over all of the who, how, why, all of the hard questions of this, and just merely saying, jumping to the conclusion that the Syrian government is behind it, without, in fact, going against most of the circumstantial evidence, for starters. And the what they call cui bono and motivation and all of the other things, and track record if you know about Ghouta. So they're going against all of the prior evidence and now blaming Assad. And I think that most people even your listeners, probably a large majority, just have kind of gullible and have believed that the White House and Ivanka Trump, beautiful woman that she is, would not be lying to us. But what it is just very simplistic jumping to a conclusion without any actual evidence or intelligence. Ivanka Trump is not trained in intelligence. You know, she's maybe good at other things, but she's not trained on this. And all she was emotional when she saw the video. I think also, by the way, some of the neocon war hawks realize that by blaming Ivanka Trump, they have an out. Because they can say, well, you know, she was just a dumb, beautiful woman, and certainly she didn't realize that this could have been a a frame up or whatever. She just was emotional about it. So they're using her that way. And if, in fact, it does get debunked, but as the 2013 attack was largely debunked, now they have an out. They say, well, Ivanka was crying and that influenced her father.
My guest is Colleen Rowley, former FBI special agent, and we're talking about the alleged, the attack in alleged Syrian gas attack on civilians in Idlib province or Idlib in Syria, which Colleen and others have, other veterans, intelligence professionals for peace, and later Theodore Postol have debunked. Now, is that paper by Postol available online?
You know, I think we got access to it early, and I got my fingers crossed that it will be made public. I'm hoping it's sooner rather than later because this is such a serious mess we're in. There's something else, I think. This is my opinion. Vips has never really written or anything about this because it's so fast developing. The situation of the United States right now is that they've got the military on about four or five major war fronts, one of which is Syria. Another one is Yemen, where we are helping Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and Qatar to battle the Houthis for their Saudi Arabia's purposes and whatever. So that, by the way, is a war front, too, because there's a plan to attack the port of Yemen. And the UN now predicts that this is already, by the way, already resulting in starvation, a real genocide, killing children in Yemen. And if that port is attacked, which cuts off all supplies, it'll be even far worse. So that's the second front. The third front is the North Korea front, where Trump is threatening through tweets to attack North Korea, probably a preemptive strike. My own opinion is that might even be the most likely first place we see this preemption, you know, use. We hope it's not nuclear, but because they talk about this all the time. China has sent 150,000 troops to the border with North Korea because, first of all, the North Koreans are trying to flood into China to escape. What a mess. Well, we've got Ukraine. There's at least four or five fronts, that the islands in the South China Seas, where the U.S. now has sent its carriers. They're doing little provocative war game things, playing around in these places, up on the border of the Balkans with Russia, at least four or five, maybe six fronts. Well, okay, is there an adult in the Pentagon? Is there an adult strategist in the Pentagon that says, think we got a recipe for disaster? We are spread so thin. You know, this isn't like Vietnam where we at least could send all, you know, hundreds of thousands of people into Vietnam. Now, again, I'm just being a military mind here, which I, to be honest, it's hard for me to put myself in their mode. But I think as an adult military strategist, you have to say, hey, we got to juggle these. So we've got to do one first. We can't be simultaneously on five war fronts. And I think for right now, this is, again, my opinion here, thinking like a military strategist, that they got to prioritize. And the most recent thing with Madison McMaster is saying that Syria will take a back seat. So it doesn't mean we're giving up on regime change, but they're trying to say, well, it's not our first priority. You know, our fighting against ISIS and Al-Qaeda are our first priority, which, by the way, is a bit of a cover-up because we've constantly been more or less helping ISIS and Al-Qaeda in many ways through Saudi Arabia and through these surrounding countries. Even Israel is part of that whole mess. And I think that you know, fighting Al-Qaeda is really not a priority, or fighting ISIS is not a true priority. And they're down a little bit because of Syria and Russia having been more effective in that area. So my prediction is that we're saying Syria can go on a backseat for now. And I think that what the real chance is that we may see more provocation, if not outright, even preemptive attack on North Korea, is kind of where I, and that Houthi, the Yemen port, which I think could easily occur at the same time. I think those might be kind of be prioritized for the moment here. It doesn't mean anything about these other five war fronts that are all going on, but I think that maybe the military themselves, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, are a little bit nervous about operating on five different places all around the world. And these are all over, too. If you think South China Sea to Syria to Ukraine, they're, I mean, they're really spread throughout the world. So as great as our superpower military is, I think it's being effectively strained at this point to be operating all over like this.
Well, it's interesting that when Xi Jinping, the Chinese premier, was visiting Mar-a-Lago with Trump, that's when Trump decided to attack Syria as if to send a message to China. But I don't seriously think China is going to blink any more than Putin is going to blink. But one thing that I'm just wondering, if one of the reasons for Putin's attacking Syria and was to take the heat off of him from these three congressional investigations and one intelligence department investigation of his so-called ties with Russia. And he's trying to show that he's really tough on Russia, and suddenly all these liberals who are going after him for colluding with Putin and being his best friend and so on are now praising him. All these newspapers, 18 articles and op-ed pieces in the five major newspapers praising Trump for his acting presidential, because I guess to act presidential is to bomb some country. I think the last president who didn't do that, who didn't bomb another country and is considered to have been weak, was Jimmy Carter. Interesting.
I think that's exactly right. There were many motivations that dovetailed here, and one was just the purely domestic political one that you just went through. Exactly right. I've actually, FAIR, which is a media watchdog, said that of 46 op-eds, only one was skeptical about not further bombing Syria. 45 of 46 were encouraging Trump to go farther and harder. That's how bad our mainstream media is. So, and you're absolutely right. That's kind of what I described with the sea change. I had a friend that emailed today and said, oh, finally, there's bipartisan consensus, and it's about bombing people. We finally have achieved a bipartisan consensus. And, this is war does that. This is why James Madison and the other founding fathers in their wisdom knew from King George and what had gone on before that all leaders, again, there's no such thing as a benevolent leader. They can be constrained through laws and through other pressures and powers to do the right thing. Sometimes they do when it's in their own interest too. But we should not be so gullible to believe that a leader, when they announce war on a foreign country, is doing that in our public interest. They're doing it for their own. That's exactly with Trump. He had political motivations for doing this bombing of Syria. And I don't think the lives of children mattered at all. And, of course, not just to Trump, it's to any of these people. They are in war. Many of them actually argue privately behind closed doors to take the gloves off, as Dick Cheney did, whatever, and to have what they call all-out, total war, where the old treaties about use of chemical, Sherman's March to the Sea, many of the military mind believes that if you're constrained in war and can't, through the laws of war that say that you're not supposed to kill so many civilians, it's supposed to be proportional, these different laws, but they chafe under those restraints, and they blame they're losing a war. Vietnam, there's many, many West Point, PhD papers that claim that but they were too restrained, and that if they had just been less restrained. But this is kind of the always way of thinking. And so These people are not shocked about the killing of children. They're very inured to it. They've been through it. They've been involved with drone bombing, et cetera, et cetera. For people to believe, as most of our liberals do now in the country, believe that that we bombed Syria because we were outraged by the killing of children is completely ridiculous. Because, again, this is what war does, and it's the saddest thing in the world. For listeners who don't understand, who think it's only on foreigners, that the most recent wars since the Civil War, we have not had war on U.S. soil. So other than having Cronkite or something show us the images from Vietnam or the picture from My Lai, most Americans don't even understand what is under the drone bombing regime. They don't understand how this is working on, you know, well over a million, maybe heading up closer to 2 million people as a result of all of these. And by the way, I never call it U.S. wars. I say U.S., NATO, Israel. If you've seen my Facebook, I usually say yes. All three of them, because this is an unholy alliance where we've been able to get these other countries into this perpetual war. And because Americans don't seem to be affected.
And there's no draft.
Yeah,
that's
and there's
critical.
No draft, and there's no taxes, because one of Madison's points about making war limited was he said once you raise taxes, then people will, you know, not be so anxious and eager, and you'll get the what we call Vietnam syndrome. And so there's no taxes. We're at $20 trillion, and it's just skyrocketing up Trump's call for 54 more billion. There's no austerity. That's gone. That's over. So the national debt looks to even skyrocket above 20 trillion. We're totally bankrupt, by the way. That's what that means. We can't possibly pay off 20 trillion national debt. And then, but the people don't know it because it's out of sight, out of mind. It's like spending
Colleen,
on a credit card.
Colleen, we've come to the end of the hour syndrome. That's one that doesn't matter who's in office. This has been very enlightening and very interesting. I know my listeners have gotten a lot out of it. I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on Takes on the World, Colleen Rowley. We have to do it again, and not after 3 years.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
And thanks for continuing the struggle against this silly nonsense insanity.
And look for Jeff Blank. Thanks for listening.